This is an AM 770 CHQR podcast of The World Tonight with Rob Breckenridge.
A fascinating subject area, and I think a lot of people do. I mean, it's one of the reasons why there's still so much fascination with the question of, say Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, or closer to home here, Ogopogo. You know, the prospect that a creature, in this case, you know, these cases, pretty remarkable creatures actually exist. Something we didn't know actually does exist. Now, scientists do make those kinds of findings quite often. Now, it's usually a different kind of species that's more or less similar to something we already know. So it's not as exciting or dramatic. But the reason we know that these other species exist is because of science. We find them, or we find evidence that they once did exist or recently existed. That's the problem with what's known as pseudoscience or cryptoscience, these lake monsters and Bigfoot-like creatures. Until we have proof that they exist, we can't really say for sure that they do. That doesn't mean we conclude that they don't and just stop looking for them or stop being curious about them. But some perspective is needed. And that's where this our next guest comes in, this next project. A new website's been launched, monsterscience.org. To bring some of that perspective to this whole question, joining us on the line is one of the creators of the project. He's co-host of Monster Talk, the podcast at the website. His name is Blake Smith. Blake, good to talk to you. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
Let's get a bit more of the background here, how this all came about and why you and the other folks involved felt that monsterscience.org was needed.
Well, the Monster Science Project was the first one to come together, and what happened was an anthropologist here in the States named Jeff Meldrum put together a book called Sasquatch: Legend Meets Science. And Jeff is a well-respected anthropologist, but he's also well-known in the cryptozoology circles for supporting Bigfoot. And he's one of the few accredited scientists who are working in that field. So when he came out with this book, it looked like a very strong endorsement of science and Bigfoot. A lot of us in the, let's call it the skeptics community, really thought that there's probably not as good of an evidence base as he thought there was. So four guys, Mike Dennett, Dave Daigling, Matt Crowley, and Ben Radford got together and working for Skeptical Inquirer magazine, put together a series of articles to rebut Jeff's assertions. And when they worked together, they realized they'd come across a lot of evidence that just wasn't well known. What happens, I think, in cryptozoology is anecdotes and generalized evidence are presented to the public because it's sensational. And then when it's actually, you know, carefully scrutinized, there's no going back and fact-checking it, and there's not a lot of places on the Internet or in libraries where you can find the rebuttals. So they decided to put together a website, and it sat around for about a year, and I got involved because I'm a web developer and a monster enthusiast, but a skeptic, and I decided to help them put together this new version that collected the articles, and that's how Monster Science got together.
Okay. Well, and I want to pick up on that because I think there is an assumption among what I guess we can call the believers that the skeptics, they don't want to believe, that they've made up their mind, that somehow you're against the notion of Bigfoot existing. It's something you're opposed to. I think that's the suggestion they convey. But obviously what I'm getting from you, and I think a lot of people like this, I mean, it would be pretty darn cool if Bigfoot existed.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it. Yeah. It would be so important not just to have the cultural icon of Bigfoot, to have a real-life counterpart. But more importantly, I think, because Bigfoot would represent an important primate for science to study right here in the United States and in North America. But the reality is that there's just no hard evidence for that animal, you know. And that's kind of disappointing. For me, people like me, I started out as a child as absolutely a believer. You know, so it took a long time to even get exposed to the kind of critical thinking that makes me say, well, wait a minute, does this really exist? And can we actually look at this evidence and make any kind of scientific findings from it? And so, you know, none of the skeptics I know, there's sort of like this burgeoning, growing skeptical activist community in the Internet, and I'm really well plugged into that, but Most of us are very open to good evidence. I mean, there's none of us who would deny the DNA evidence of a body of any of these animals if it could be produced. It's the lack of the hard evidence that really disappoints us. And so what our role is to say, okay, sensationalist television programs, they want you to watch their show, buy the stuff on their commercials. They don't care if it's real or not. They want you to watch the show. Mm-hmm. We care because this is not just a fun claim and a way to, you know, sell potato chips. This is a really interesting scientific question. And if these animals are real, we'd like to be in on the discovery just like everybody else. We'd love it to be true, but just saying I saw it doesn't make it so.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I mean, the enthusiasts will say, you know, that there is evidence. We've got sightings, we've got footprints that we've found, and they say, you know, some of these are awfully sophisticated in terms of the depth or the way they're spread apart. Couldn't possibly be made by a person, couldn't possibly be a bear or anything else. So they say there's no other explanation, but in this case, Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's one of those things. If it's not easily explained, then it's got to be my magic monster. That's not that's not a very good argument in the end. I love the idea that there could be these creatures. And some of them turned out to be true. I mean, we've got the giant squid is my favorite. When I was a kid, that was way more myth than fact. But you know, now we've got samples washed up on beaches and it turned out to be a real animal. So it's not always not a real animal, but in most of these cases, that seems to be the case. We can't say finally with any certainty that there's definitely not a Bigfoot, and anybody who tells you that is not right, because all they have to do to make that untrue is produce a body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not what science does. Science doesn't prove there's not something, but science is really good at evaluating whether something is real.
Well, and I mean, you know, new species are being found all the time. They're being found in some very remote parts of the world. It does strike me as rather odd that whether it's, the northwestern U.S. or western parts of Canada or wherever else these creatures are said to exist, that they've existed for so long, so close to us that we're brushing up against them in the woods, purportedly, and yet we've never found one of them.
Yeah, we just discussed that in a recent episode of Monster Talk. There's a paradox where the Bigfoot fans will say, well, you don't find a body for Bigfoot because they live in rural areas and they would never be hit by a car, you know. But at the same time, there's lots and lots of sightings because people are seeing them. Well, the two things can't be true. Bigfoot can't be so remote that it's never seen, yet also seen all the time, right?
Yeah.
So, and then there's another argument about, well, you never find bear bones in the woods. The late Grover Krantz really liked to say that. And I did some studies, and it turns out that that's completely erroneous. I found, I think, something like there's about 25 naturally dead bears they find every year just in the state of Pennsylvania. So, you know, a lot of these arguments are not true. But what happens is when people want to find out about Bigfoot or lake monsters or the chupacabra, they don't go to science places because they wouldn't expect to find them there. And where they go instead is, you know, monster websites and monster magazines and monster television shows, in whose best interest it is to keep it a mystery, or keep the hope alive. So Monster Science and Monster Talk are a direct answer to that, to try to produce a way to have an archive of what the real science says. And so we bring on guests who are specialists in DNA and guests who are specialists in, for example, we have an upcoming guest who's a specialist in plesiosaurs. He's a paleontologist who studies them. So we're going to find out, what would a plesiosaur look like if it lived in a lake? What would we expect to see on the shore? Because there's all kinds of questions. What did they eat? Did they lay eggs? If these animals crawled up on the beach and laid eggs, we'd see them, you know?
I would think so. Blake, hang on a second here. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk a bit more about the fascination in this area, why people do want to know or even want to believe that lake monsters and incredibly large primates are out there and just waiting to be discovered. But you can find out more, by the way, again, the website monsterscience.org. Blake Smith, involved in the website, co-host of Monster Talk, the podcast, is The World Tonight. We're back after this. MonsterScience.org, also MonsterTalk.org are the websites of Blake Smith, co-host of the Monster Talk podcast, involved in MonsterScience.org, is on the line with us. Blake, some of what we've been seeing in the news, not necessarily a case of people thinking they've seen these, I guess we have to assume for now, mythical creatures, but people finding things and we're not sure what to make of them. One of the famous examples was the what became known as the Montauk Monster, and these weird pictures of these weird corpses that looked, you know, to the layman, like nothing that we've ever seen before. Are we seeing more stories like this with technology, the cameras and the internet making the rounds, and what should we make of them?
Well, that's a good question. The Montauk Monster is a great example of where the witnesses could have easily solved the question of what the animal was, but instead they didn't. They took a picture. But pictures are terrible evidence, especially for evaluating what something is. In this case, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, a lot of mammals, if they're allowed to bloat on the beach, start to look very similar. Theoretically, we all come from a similar base, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what could have been done is any kind of a little bone or piece of skin could have been taken from that animal, and it doesn't take very much at all to get a DNA sample, and within a few minutes, well, a couple hours of processing and then a few minutes to check the sample, it could have been known exactly what that animal was. Witnesses typically do things like take a picture and they stand back far away from the object or the thing they're seeing, and even in a clear picture like the Montauk Monster, it's really hard to tell what the animal is, but a bone, a piece of skin, any of that could have solved that problem. And when they take these pictures, they don't take anything to give scale. They could put their hand down next to the creature. They could put their foot down, a ruler, especially when these things are dead, you know. This is such a simple thing to get scale, or just to go back later and put back a ruler or anything. How can, you know, we know? I mean, we didn't know if that creature was a foot across or 3 foot across. So humans, even when we have what things like cameras, are not the best witnesses. We don't always think about, oh, there's a weird thing, but how do I determine what it is? Which is kind of the point of organized skepticism, I guess, is trying to figure out how to solve mysteries. It's not really rejecting mysteries or hating mysteries. It's trying to solve them, and that's what I really am into it for. I love solving mysteries. I love trying to figure out what these things really are.
Well, and I think that's just as interesting. Sometimes, I guess to other people, it isn't. And maybe the media is to be faulted in some of this. It's great. It's sensational to plaster that picture, the Montauk Monster, out there. People are clicking on your website, buying your newspaper, watching your evening news. They're fascinated by this. The follow-up later on, it's just, you know, a dead, rotting, bloated raccoon. It's not as exciting, or it might even seem embarrassing to the media. We don't want to run this after we made so much of it a couple of weeks ago.
Well, a good example would be the Bigfoot hoax from Georgia. That's my home state.
Yeah.
The media, the day that took place, a friend of mine called me out of the blue, knew I was a very active skeptic, and said, you were wrong. It is real. I saw it on CNN. and it took me several minutes to calm him down and say, what did you see on CNN? They've got Bigfoot. Well, are you sure? They said they have Bigfoot? Or did they say someone said they had Bigfoot? Because that's the distinction.
Right.
And it took just a few minutes to find out, no, the real claim was they say they have Bigfoot. And that's a different claim altogether than CNN reporting Bigfoot's been found. But that distinction is subtle to the average listener. Lots of people probably spent several days thinking Bigfoot might be real, wait till the press conference, discover, no, it's a rubber suit in a freezer. So that was a little bit of crow eating, but it was a disappointment to me because the skeptics, and weirdly enough, the crypto guys too, cryptozoologists, Bigfoot, the BFRO and Crypto Mundo, some of the big crypto sites, they knew within hours that it was a hoax and could specifically tell you what the rubber mask suit came from. I mean, we were all over it, but CNN and Fox, everybody else, who just wanted to talk about the story, is Bigfoot in a freezer, stand by, you know, buy our potato chips. And there's nothing wrong with potato chips. I'm just saying that you don't have to sell them with lies.
Well, no, that's a good point. Now, we've seen stories closer to our neck of the woods here just recently about Ogopogo, one of the famous lake monsters. And again, it's similar in nature. Someone claims they found a mysterious-looking carcass. They say, look, we don't know what to make of this. It could be a baby Ogopogo, and we're going to send it off for some analysis. Have you seen these stories?
Wow. I saw the one that there was a sighting on the 13th. The two people saw Ogopogo in the water. Did you see? Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, I saw that one. There was the other one. This is one of the stories I have. This was July 7th in the Vancouver province.
A mysterious body. Wow. Okay. I haven't seen that one.
Okay. Yeah, a mysterious-looking body found along the shore of Okanagan Lake might be the remains of legendary Ogopogo. An expert says Dan Popov, I guess, is the expert. It doesn't explain why he is. Says he found the... or rather, Arlene Gall is the expert here. Dan Popov found the 1.2-meter-long carcass last month while kayaking. He immediately called Arlene Gall, who has written three books about Ogopogo.
A day later, he sent her a photo
of the
carcass. She got the sample, and now we don't know where it is, right?
Yeah.
The problem is, legitimate scientists can solve this question in hours. We had the good fortune to talk to a DNA specialist, and he was able to tell us that with his laptop, right, just with his laptop, once they get the DNA decoded, within 15 minutes, he can tell you what a sample is, right? Anything. I mean, he could tell you if they don't know the specific animal, if for some reason it has been cataloged, they can tell you whether it's a reptile, whether it's a mammal, you know, whether it's a primate, whether it's a bird. They can do all this in minutes, and all they need is a viable DNA sample. So a lot of times when we see things like, they say, oh, it was a mysterious animal. We don't know. DNA analysis was inconclusive. What that usually means is they didn't find DNA. So whether that means the DNA had all degraded or that means that the particular animal or creature wasn't even a real animal, one of those two things. A lot of times people put together little models and or fake fur and try to pass it off as good evidence. And science has gotten to the point where those kind of samples really don't work. This sounds like a real animal, but it could have been answered in a few hours at a lab at a university, and instead we may never hear from it again because if it's disconfirming evidence, it's not likely to surface from a cryptozoologist.
Yeah. And let me ask you this, and I guess it speaks to the question of plausibility, because you said earlier we can never really say for certainty that something doesn't exist, but obviously when you research this area, some are more plausible than others. A big primate living in the wilderness? Maybe. You know, a 500-foot-long, 8-headed, fire-breathing monster. If I told you I think I saw one, you could probably safely assume that I didn't, right?
I would ask you a few more questions about what you had had that evening to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the more implausible the creature it is, the greater the burden of proof, right?
Yeah.
So, like in the case of this most recent sighting, the Sanderson and Krug, the animal, it sounds like two responsible witnesses saw an animal in the lake. And if you look at that article, and that was it Kelowna, is that how you say that?
Yeah,
the Kelowna Daily Courier. The animal they're describing, they describe it as serpentine, about 30 feet long. It's undulating in the water. It has humps. It's bigger than any known snake at 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It stuck out at least 3 feet from the water. Sometimes it was swimming. That sounds like a real animal, but what it doesn't sound like is a snake or a water reptile, because snakes, for example, swim laterally. We see sea monster pictures all the time from, you know, old maps and old depictions, and it shows them undulating vertically or dorsally in the water. But really, snakes swim laterally. They swim almost like they move on the ground, side to side. So it wouldn't be likely that a snake was in the lake. But we do know an animal that travels in this fashion and could easily appear to be 30 feet long, and part of it could stick up out of the water very much like a head of a large serpent, and that's the otter. The otter is known to travel in straight lines when they're traveling as a family, and when there's a space between them, it looks very much like a serpentine animal moving through the water. I found a little bit of video of this on the YouTube and was able to put together a little video. I was trying to help Ben Radford with his book, Lake Muster Mysteries.
Yeah.
He and Joe Nickel did that book. And there's a drawing in the book, which I actually included in the video, which shows Joe's depiction of otters traveling in a lake. This is what she's describing here is a perfect description of this, and it's so easy to make a mistake about the size of an animal when you're looking at an open expanse of water. Is it a big animal far away, or is it a smaller animal close up, and you just can't tell? So what she's describing there, having not talked to the witnesses or been to the site, it certainly sounds like a classic case of otters swimming across the lake.
And part of it's psychology, right? If you're down at the river and you see some otters, you don't react. But it's almost if you're at Loch Ness or Lake Okanagan, you're almost
primed.
Yeah.
You've been primed for monster thought.
Yeah, you really have. Blake, we'll leave it there. Much more, again, as mentioned, monsterscience.org and also monstertalk.org. It's been fun, Blake. Thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. Good night, Calgary.
All right. Good night, Georgia. Thanks, Blake. Blake Smith, he's co-host of Monster Talk, monstertalk.org, and one of the scientists involved, one of the folks involved at monsterscience.org.
Listen to The World Tonight, weeknights from 6:30 till 9 on AM 770 CHQR, a Chorus Entertainment Company.